I'd like to welcome you to this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Thursday, March 22nd, 2007, and members present are Senators Bundy, Davis, Ellis, and Stevens. We have a number of items before us, but one of the first things coming around to committee members will be the letters for the two commissioners who have been reviewed for confirmation by the committee, as well as the other folks. So feel free to sign those letters, and we can submit those on to the secretary. And then the calendar before us today is first SJR number 4, Natural Gas for State Residents by Senator Willikowski, followed by Senate Bill 121, Cruise Ship Discharge. I hope to move both of those bills along. And then we will have our first public hearing on Senate Bill 120 relating to unemployment compensation benefits. That bill will be heard today and held over for further consideration. So let's invite Senator Willikowski back to the table. Good afternoon, Senator.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
We do have a proposed committee substitute that's an outgrowth of our last discussion and some of the suggested changes that you had. And I believe all committee members should have received the committee substitute. Senator Willikowski, do you want to walk us through the differences between the proposed committee substitute and your original legislation?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will. If looking at, there's three changes. Looking at line 11 on page 2 of the original, and I don't know if you want me to kind of tack this to the original one that you have, but we changed the states. We had a clause in there that said the state's first priority must be to ensure the availability of affordable natural gas to meet the needs of the people of the state. We changed that to the state must have as a priority the availability of affordable natural gas to meet the needs of its people. And the essence of that was, this was at the request of some of the producers. We didn't want to come out and say that this was our absolute first priority, although it's certainly an important priority. We wanted to say that it was a priority. That's change number one. Change number two from the original page 2, line 15, be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature respectfully requests the Attorney General. After that, we added in coordination with the Department of Natural Resources. And we just felt that the Department of Natural Resources is expert in this area, and it would be appropriate for the Attorney General to coordinate with DNR. And actually, DNR asked for that, and we have no objection to that. The third change is in that same paragraph, line 16, page 2, we changed the word termination to non-renewal, because it's not really a termination of the agreement. It's just simply not extending the renewal. Those are the three changes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Are there comments or questions about the proposed changes? We had public hearing when the bill was originally before us. Is there anyone who would like to comment on the proposed committee substitute? If not, the chair will entertain a motion at this time to adopt the Bullock backslash E version of the legislation.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Is there any discussion of the motion? Any objection to the motion? If not, the Bullock backslash E committee substitute is the working document before us. Any further comment or discussion by the committee? Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I still have the my concern about defining affordable natural gas. Certainly that will be free gas from some point, people's points of view. And again, just to reiterate my point that the gas belongs to all the people of the state, and the folks in Barrow or Fairbanks ought not to necessarily be subsidizing gas at less than market price for the people in South Central, even though I'd be a bit beneficiary of that subsidy. So I'm concerned about that comment, but of course I'm heartened that this is a resolution and it can be thoroughly ignored by anyone who would like to do that. I would just add that when it comes to resolutions, I'm reminded of sitting on the floor next to Lisa Murkowski when she was in the House of Representatives. We were arguing late into the night about some minutia in a resolution, and finally she stood up and said, "Do you really think anybody ever reads this stuff?"
Well, Senator Bundy, thank you for your comments. I'm personally hoping that, as a co-sponsor of this, that someone does read this. I think there's enough interest that some folks will. Any other comments about the anything in wrap-up, Senator Wilkowski? Oh, Senator Stevens.
Just if maybe Senator Wilkowski could respond to the comment about subsidy. Do you see that there's any implication here that we would be subsidizing the gas and for the Anchorage area?
No, I don't. That's not certainly not the intent of this, is to provide any subsidy. All we're saying is we want the producers to work with the local utilities to try to find a way that we can provide affordable gas to South Central businesses and residents. And we did look into trying to define affordable, and as you can imagine, it's a real rabbit hole to go down. And we talked about, well, do you peg it on poverty levels and things of that nature? It's just somewhere that we felt was not real critical to this, and we decided not to pursue it any further.
Subjective terminology. Okay. On that point, Senator Bundy, and then I want to move along.
Yeah, thank you. I understand. I'll just point out that the woman from Alaska Public Interest Group clearly stated she wanted this gas to be a welfare item, and that means it will be subsidized at some point. And again, affordable means that there are people who would want to pay less than market value. That means the rest of the state subsidizes it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I could just...
In very brief response? Very
briefly, yeah. This is our gas. This gas belongs to all Alaskans. And frankly, I would rather provide low-cost gas to Alaskans than low-cost gas to the Japanese. And I don't think this is a subsidy. I don't think this is welfare. This is Alaskans using their gas for their home and their business heating needs.
Okay, I believe the committee's, if there's no further comment, I think the committee's ready to move forward, and the chair will entertain a motion to forward the resolution on to the next committee of referral.
Mr. Chair, I move that we move out CSS Senate Chair Resolution Number 4/E out of committee with
individual recommendations.
Individual recommendations.
Okay.
Object.
Objection to the motion?
Yes.
Any discussion of the motion?
Just again, and I think Senator makes my point. The gas belongs to everyone, and this whole notion of making it a welfare option is just anathema to me. So,
okay.
I object.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Speaking to your objection, we'll call the roll, please.
Senator Hoffman, Senator Bundy.
No.
Senator Davis.
Yes.
Senator Stevens.
Yes.
Senator Ellis.
Yes. So the bill moves on to the next committee referral. Well, Senator Wilkowski, thank you for bringing this before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Okay, let's move on quickly to Senate Bill 121, Cruise Ship Discharge. Senator Elton, if you join us, please. And members of the committee have before you on your table a new committee substitute from the sponsor, or it's a committee substitute based on some of the changes discussed at the last meeting. Senator Elton, do you want to walk us through the differences between the original legislation and this proposed committee substitute?
Pardon me, Mr. Chairman. Is that E we're talking about? No. It's K.
No. Yeah. This is the Bullard /K committee substitute for Senate Bill number 121.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, two sections were removed, the former sections 8 and 9. Those sections corrected some typos that are currently in law. Waster was put in, is in law instead of wastewater, and there was a question of or if. We worked with both the agency, the Department of Law, and the legislative drafter, and determined those sections added to the title. And broadened the title, and determined that, like other instances that are the same in other law, those sections could be dealt with in a revisor's bill and would be dealt with in a revisor's bill. There is a new Section 8 in Version K, and that was necessary to fully restore the provisions of House Bill 522. It deals with information collection and gathering. And the latitudes that the department has. Those are very quickly the changes in this version. I want to mention one other thing, Mr. Chair. at your suggestion.
Well, let's hold on.
Okay.
Is that about the legal opinion?
Yeah.
Let's hold off on that. I'd like to note for the record that Senator Hoffman has joined the committee. Are there any comments or questions about the changes proposed in the committee substitute? Is there anyone here who needs to comment on the proposed committee substitute? If not, the chair will entertain a motion to adopt as the working document before us the Bullard / K committee substitute for Senate Bill number 121.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any discussion of the motion? Any objection to the motion? If not, that's the working document before us. Senator Elton, why don't you go ahead with your next comment?
Okay. Two additional comments, Mr. Chair. The first is, at your suggestion last night, Senator Bundy asked a pertinent question on whether or not this bill constitutes a substantive change to the initiative. We had been assured previously that it didn't. The chair suggested that we get that in writing. We requested that this morning, first thing this morning. I don't know whether it was a filter up there or a miscommunication on our part, but instead of getting a memo that dealt with a substantive issue, we got a sectional analysis that was delivered about 1:15. And so I apologize to the committee. I can tell you and would like to put on the record that in our conversation this morning with the drafter, he assured us that it was not a substantive change. We intend to point out that we hadn't asked for a sectional. We had asked for a legal opinion, and I'm more than willing to get a copy to the senator that asked the question and to the chair when we do get it.
Right, and to the committee so we can make it part of the yep. official record.
And Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, I was pulled out of the room here about 5 minutes ago, and a member of the Department of Law who represents DEC pointed out, made a suggestion for a potential amendment that the committee may wish to consider, and it's to further tighten the title on line two on page one between small and passenger. Inserts small commercial passenger. Insert the word commercial. I think it's a good suggestion. I think it tightens the title, and I think it definitely clarifies there is only one class of vessel that we're talking about, and that's small commercial vessels. Small commercial passenger vessel. So I would commend that to the committee's attention. And as the sponsor of the bill, I have no objection to that amendment.
Okay. That's a very clear, straightforward suggestion. I guess I would, if it's the will of the committee, be willing to entertain a motion at this time to insert the word commercial between small and passenger on line two of the title of the committee substitute we adopted. Does everybody understand the proposal? And is it...
Mr. Chairman, I move.
Okay, so moved. To insert the word commercial, yes, between small and passenger. if it were more complicated than that, I'd want to do it in a different form or fashion. But if we're all clear on what we're doing, is there any discussion of that motion?
It's just a question. I mean, minor.
Senator.
But what is the difference, Mr. Chairman, between a small passenger vessel and a small commercial passenger vessel? Doesn't passenger indicate that it's commercial, or am I missing the point there?
Senator Elton.
Mr. Chair, I hate to speak for the Department of Law, and they're behind me, so if they disagree with my answer, they can come up. A small passenger vessel could be my 16-foot Boston Whaler, and clearly this is not intended to affect my 16-foot Boston Whaler. It's only commercial. Small commercial and small commercial passenger vessels are otherwise described in law. My recollection is it's 250 or less passengers.
Okay. I think I understand. So it's, yeah, not small passengers. It's
right.
now,
Mr. Chair, that was a definition I hadn't even thought of.
He's always trying to go after the Speaker of the House. I try to discourage that every chance I get. Okay, did you want to pursue that further with the Department of Law, or
no,
your question is answered?
Okay, I understand.
Okay. Is there any objection to the motion to adopt the amendment? Hearing none, we have made that change. Is there anything further on this legislation? Any other comments or questions? We've had the bill before us. We've made these changes. I'm comfortable moving this bill along. Want to see how other members feel. Senator Stevens.
Just a question, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Could you tell us, Senator Elton, what this means that these small commercial vessels have to do that they didn't have to do before? What's the change we're dealing with there?
Mr. Chair, through the chair, Senator Stevens, there really is no change. We adopted a couple of years ago a change in statutes that addressed the realities of the small commercial passenger vessel. They're U.S. flagged. They didn't have the capacity, simply because of size, to adopt kind of the wastewater treatment plants that were in existence at the time. And so the legislature, in a bill, House Bill 522, that passed the Senate unanimously and the House unanimously, put into place an alternative process through which these small vessels that had these problems could comply with what was good for the state on wastewater discharge. And so that was the genesis of House Bill 522. And not because of a problem with the initiative sponsors, but the initiative sponsors had already gotten the petition signature books for the head tax before House Bill 522 was kind of a twinkle in any legislator's eyes. And the legislature did not note that the initiative that had been approved repealed the section that we were amending, and because of that, what we've tried to do is we've simply tried to reinstate in whole the program on wastewater for small commercial passenger vessels that we had before the passage of the initiative. With that said, the process has worked very, very well. I mean, we have met several times with industry representatives, with the department, with DEC, and with Department of Law attorneys to come up with this. And each and every party feels that this does reinstate what we had before without any changes to what we had before. A longer answer maybe than you needed, but...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bundy?
And just curiosity along those lines, I know that the sponsors of the initiative pulled it back and made some changes, and it's just curious as to why, as long as they were making some changes, they didn't make this change.
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I think in the same way that we hadn't noted when we passed House Bill 522, I don't think they noted it. And because of that, we got in touch with the initiative sponsors and we asked them if they had any problems with this. There should be a letter in your packet saying that it was an inadvertent incident that followed the initiative. They have no problems with the passage of this bill.
Okay. So it's possible that initiatives, even though they're the will of the people, aren't as good as they ought to be.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if you want me to respond. I would just say that I think it's a problem we all know with initiatives. They don't go through a committee process where you get a complete vetting of language.
Thank you, Senator Elton. I would note that we do have two fiscal notes, both zero for the bill. There's an attached analysis for one of them. So those will accompany the bill. Is there further discussion of the legislation? There are folks online, but they were just available, people that testified last time available for questions if necessary. If there's nothing further, I will entertain a motion to move Senate Bill 121, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 121 with accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations onto the next committee of referral.
So moved, Mr. Chairman, as amended.
Okay. Is there discussion of the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much. Let's move on now to Senate Bill, the first public hearing on Senate Bill 120, Unemployment Compensation Benefits. And I'd like to ask committee staff Dana Owen to join us at the table. Mr. Owen will be presenting the bill, followed by representatives from the Department of Labor, Pat Shire, Jim Wilson, and then we have other folks from the public as well. So Mr. Owen, we'll give you a moment to get settled there.
Thank you.
If you could just state your name and affiliation for the record and go right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I am Dana Owen. I'm an aide to Senator Ellis and staff to this committee. Senate Bill 120 is being brought before you because of the failure of the state to raise the maximum weekly benefit amount under unemployment insurance since 1997. We feel that that's lagged behind. I'd like to first step you through the bill, explain what the bill does, and then give you a little bit more of a briefing about the need for the bill. In Section 1 of the bill, we extend the schedule of payment amounts. We raise the maximum weekly benefit amount from $248, where it has been since 1997, to $370. Section 2 of the bill sets out the method of determining how many weeks of benefits a person is eligible for. Section 2 of the bill includes for eligibility persons who fall under a new Section H, which is added in Section 3 of the bill. Section 3 allows for increases in the maximum weekly benefit amounts as wages increase. Specifically, the maximum weekly benefit will increase $2 and the highest base period wages by $250 when average wages have increased by an amount established by the Department of Labor. Weekly benefit amounts are capped at 50% replacement of average weekly wages. The section of the bill also provides for a public notice for these changes. It exempts from that notice from provisions of the Administrative Procedures Act that normally apply to regulations. Should the average wage decrease to the extent that adjustments to benefit amounts would be appropriate to protect the trust fund, the commissioner is then obliged to report to the governor and to the legislature for their consideration. The section also provides a method of determining the average weekly wage. Section 4's transition language allows the department to begin adopting regulations immediately. Section 5 sets an immediate effective date for Section 4. Section 6 has a January 1st, 2008 effective date for all of the rest of the bill. Then I would like to just point out a couple of things about the need for the bill. Alaska lags other states in providing unemployment insurance benefit that replaces wages lost when a person loses his or her job. I'm not sure whether it's in your, I believe it's in the Department of Labor's handout that was given to each member. The Alaska Trends article shows that Alaska, in fact, is dead last among the states. It ranks number 50 among the states in the ability to replace wages lost from unemployment. We are ahead only of the District of Columbia in that regard. The maximum benefit amount has been frozen since 1997. And I'd also like to point out that since 1984, the Anchorage Consumer Price Index has risen 71.6%. Meanwhile, the maximum benefit amount over that time has risen only 32%. So with those notes, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to try and answer questions. If you have technical questions about unemployment insurance, the trust fund, or how any of the wages are determined, or how the amounts are determined, we have people from the Department of Labor here to testify.
Okay. Mr. Owen, thanks for laying out the mechanics of the bill and the main points. Did you want to just review for folks what's in their packet? I know there's some excellent information here as far as I can tell, and do you just want to highlight some of those things for the committee members?
I would certainly direct your attention to the Alaska Department of Labor's Economic Trends article. I think it's a very comprehensive overview of unemployment insurance, and I think while I don't think that's necessarily the purpose of the article, I think it demonstrates the need for this bill very clearly, and I would highly recommend it to your attention.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Owen at this point? Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. The chairman and I went around this block a few times before with Senate Bill 136, trying to come up with some answers. As we worked on that bill, I think we added the verbiage that in order to qualify, you had to be actively seeking work. Because there is the Alaska myth about people who work 6 months and sit in a rocking chair for 6 months. Does this version contain any reference to actively seeking work?
Senator Bundy, there's no reference to that in the bill itself.
But Senator Bundy, on that point, I think I mentioned to you off the record and want to mention it now on the record that I'm open to working with you and other folks, other interests, to include some of that information. We did come to an accommodation last year. I thought you did some good work on that, and we're definitely going to entertain those kinds of improvements to the bill.
Thank you. And if I might,
sure, Chairman, go ahead.
Alaska law is one of the few that allows people who are fired for cause to immediately or in a short time go on seek UI benefits. Is that addressed at all in this?
Mr. Chairman, no, that's not addressed in this bill.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Senator Hoffman and then Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If this legislation passed, where would Alaska fall in the rankings of states?
I'm not entirely certain of that, but I think the Department of Labor can probably answer that question for you. Yeah.
I have heard them give the answer, and I think we can get that for you today. Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Referring to the bottom of page 7, section 3, maybe you could explain, make sure I understand this. Does this, in fact, tie the hands of, I guess this gives permission to the department to make decisions on increases. Is that a change from where we are now, where it happens with legislative action, or has this always been the case?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I don't know whether it has always been the case. This section is a new section of the bill. It provides escalation of benefits as the average wage in the state rises. I don't believe that's been a part of our law in the past, but perhaps people from the Department of Labor could correct me on that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd appreciate the department addressing that.
They'd be able to give us a historical perspective on that. So, okay, anything further before we move on? Thank you, Mr. Owen. Appreciate the presentation of the bill. Like I said, we're going to have two folks from Department of Labor, followed by Mr. Vince Baltrami, John Brown, Denny DeWitt, Royce Rock, Barbara Huff-Tuckness. So we have a number of folks to get through here today before we run out of time. Like to ask folks to keep their comments as brief as possible. We're open to the submission of written testimony, but we're going to try and do this in about 45, 50 minutes if possible. So Pat Shire, Mr. Shire, if you could come forward. Welcome to the Labor and Commerce Committee. Appreciate you being here. If you could just state your name and your title there in the Department of Labor and go ahead with your presentation. Thanks.
For the record, my name is Pat Shire. I'm the Chief of Unemployment Insurance Tax for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And as far as any testimony is concerned, I'm really content to answer any questions that the committee might have. I heard a couple, and if they could be restated, I'd be glad to address those.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question relates to the standings. It says that Alaska is second at the bottom, and if this legislation passed, where would, as it's presently in its present form, where would Alaska stand in the rankings?
Through the chair, just a moment. I have to look for my information.
I'll go right ahead.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we would fall roughly in the middle, I think 48th. And that's an estimate for me just looking at the information I have before me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So, Senator Hoffman, to start off the conversation, we didn't take the whole apple. We didn't bite the whole apple. We just took a reasonable bite, in my opinion, out. But we'd be, that's the answer I had heard before, that we'd be about in the middle. So, not on top, not at the bottom, but just in a less embarrassing place than we are today. Senator Stevens?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You may not have seen this editorial I'm reading from the Homer Tribune of February 21st, 07, and it makes a comment. It does acknowledge that the benefit amounts ranks Alaska at the bottom of the nation, but also says Alaska's workers use unemployment insurance more than most states. Do you have any information on that? I assume we're talking about is the percentage of Alaskans that use it as compared to other states.
Definitely. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I'll refer you again to the excellent, has already been mentioned, trends article, and I'll try and take you to that exact page. And it's on page 8 of the trends. We do have an extraordinarily compared to other states, high recipiency rate. 53% of our workers participate in the program.
I'm sorry, and where am I looking now?
On the bottom of page 8, the flip side, Alaska's high participation rate. And then if you look over on page 9 at the graph labeled participation rates.
Right. Thank you.
Mr. Scherer is the UI tax supervisor for the Department of Labor in the state. Can you just give us an overview of what you do and how the system works and just kind of a layperson's brief introduction to the system?
Mr. Chairman, certainly. We are the kinder, gentler tax people that employers have to deal with. We take very seriously our charged responsibility to help employers report and pay the proper amount of unemployment tax so that there are sufficient reserves, as you'll notice in Alaska Statute 2320.010, the legislature called for. Using those reserves, we can then push money back out into those local economies when people are unemployed, because as we understand, it's not only the unemployed that suffer in those times, but it's the local businesses then that are would otherwise see an even greater drop in their income. People use this money typically to buy gas, pay the rent, groceries, things of that nature. And employers also tell us that the unemployment insurance program helps keep qualified workers in the local economy as well, so that when the economy turns around, that those people remain in place and they don't have to look outside the state, for example, or outside their economic area to try and find workers and entice them back in with even larger pay scales or moving costs, things of that nature.
Okay. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question I'd ask earlier for Dana Owen, on the bottom of page 7, talking about the department having the ability to increase weekly benefits without legislative approval. Is that something new, Mr. Scherer? Have you had that power in the past?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, that is new. It is not currently in statute.
So could, through the chair, could you defend that that change?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, there are reasons to embrace this and reasons to examine it carefully. The fact that it's indexed would keep the department and the legislature free of the burden of having this discussion periodically. On the other hand, I understand that there are others who are concerned about increased benefits, and this is an opportunity for them to weigh in before the legislative body.
Senator Bundy?
Yeah, thank you. What this, in essence, is an opportunity for the department to simply do a cost of living adjustment without legislative involvement. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, it would have that effect.
Yeah. If I might continue. Sure. And again, as we discussed this before, and just to help refresh my memory, I've often heard that Alaska has the lowest benefits, but one of the more generous or easier programs to take advantage of. We have, as I understand it, dependent benefits for someone that's on UI. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, yes. As in the trends article, it's listed approximately 40% of the individuals that claim benefits also claim a dependent, and 10% of those claim the maximum number, 3 or more dependents.
If I might, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
And is that used to calculate the average, when we look at average benefits compared to other states?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I'd have to defer to my colleague Jim Wilson to answer that question.
Yeah, okay. We'll have him up in just a moment.
All right. and if I might, just looking at page 7, the legislative considerations, if we this bill were to pass and UA benefits go up, it is likely that the employee contributions would have to go up as well. So there's a probably hidden tax on the worker to increase these benefits, as well as a tax on the employer.
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, yes, the statutorily, as close as we can get to 20% of the cost of the program must be borne by workers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Scherer, you mentioned someone mentioned the great seasonality of the Alaska workforce and how you know, businesses struggle to pay their taxes, but there's also a benefit to the businesses, the seasonal employers, for being able to retain a workforce in the state and not have to bring the college kids in or relocate them or entice them in. So there's, you know, a give and take in both directions. But given the, you know, the great seasonality of our workforce compared to many others or other states, are there aspects of a model UI system that would better balance those pressures on small businesses and medium-sized or employers in the state of Alaska? Anything that you can think of from your perspective that would help us make this reasonable legislation from a worker's perspective and an employer's perspective? Anything related to the seasonality of the Alaskan workforce that we could do in this bill that would balance things better?
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your confidence in my ability to come up with solutions to great problems on short notice, but...
Well, we're going to let you think about that one, because the bill is going to be held over for further consideration.
I appreciate that.
Okay. We'll talk to you again. We appreciate it. Anything else for this witness? Senator Hoffman?
What's the average of the lowest or the highest pay range for other states? Average, highest, and I see that we're adding from 26,750 all the way through to 42,000 as the range. Do we have that range for other states?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I don't have that at my fingertips. We can get that to you and return it to you.
Okay. Thank you. If you could make it available to the senator and to the committee as well, and we'll share it with everyone.
Very well.
Mr. Shire, thank you for being with us. And like I said, if you could consider these issues, and this is a starting point. This is a collaborative process. All these issues are open for discussion. If we're and we are truly, I'm hoping to accomplish something this year. So all these items are open for discussion, and we're interested in your professional opinions and suggestions for improvement.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I might make a comment and then ask you to restate your request on the seasonality. Mm-hmm. The statement would be that seasonality isn't the only issue. Mm-hmm. Alaska has suffered economic chilling in the past, and I mm-hmm. can report that during the period of time from 1985 to 87, when I owned a business here in Alaska, the UI Trust Fund paid out $500 million into economies all over Alaska. Depending on how you measure it, it was the third largest employer. Mm-hmm. And we paid out $100 million more than we took in, which is what the reserve is designed to do. And that $100 million that it didn't even come out of the economy during that period of time but flowed back to it was, I think, instrumental in the lives of many individuals here in Alaska. They were able to stay, hang on by the hair of their chinny chin chin, so to speak,
right,
until things began to improve. But you had a question about the
And I didn't state it very well. I was just trying to figure out a way to balance what might be a rise in the UI tax for employers if we were to move forward with something, and other things we might do in the legislation or in state statute that would balance out the impact.
Very well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Jim Wilson. Mr. Wilson, you've already received a gold star for being the author of the Trends article. It's had quite an impact, and it's a very well put together piece of work. So thank you for that effort.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the feedback on the Trends article. For the record, my name is James Wilson. I'm an economist with the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. My job title is Unemployment Insurance Actuary, and I helped to prepare a lot of the materials that are in your packet in addition to authoring the Trends article. I don't have a prepared statement for you, but what I did come prepared to do was to answer any questions that you might have about the financing or taxation provisions of the unemployment insurance program or some of the estimates that have been produced are relative to the bill.
Did you have any perspective on the question posed by Senator Hoffman?
Could you restate the question for me, sir?
My question was, do you have a breakdown of the upper limits by other states? The legislation that we have is that currently the law allows for the upper limit of $26,750, and we're going all the way up to $42,000. What are the upper limits for other states for paying for benefits?
Mr. Chair and Senator Huffman. All states have, there's a wide variety of regulations and laws in effect in each state which determine the calculation of their benefit amounts, and in some manner they are tied to wages earned. In some cases they are on different quarters, a high quarter, some of them do it on an annual basis. I can try to obtain some of that information for you, but as far as Alaska's schedule, the way it works is we have a corresponding increase in the benefit schedule of $2 for every $250 increase there is in wages. It starts at the bottom where $1,000 will qualify you for the minimum benefit amount of $44 a week. And then that goes up to top out at a maximum benefit of $248 a week. One thing I do know is that there are a few other states that have maximum benefit amounts that are roughly twice as large as Alaska's current. I'm thinking of Washington and Oregon as examples there.
Yeah, that was going to be my question about how we compare to other states on the West Coast. Can you just speak to that generally, and then I have a follow-up as well?
Mr. Chair, I recall preparing a graph of how our maximum benefit amount compares to other Western states. I believe there was about five states, Washington, Oregon, California, Nevada, maybe Hawaii, and I believe we came in last on that one.
Okay. And how often, Mr. Wilson, do other states adjust their benefit? I mean, I would imagine some are automatic. Some of them go before the legislature for periodic review. Do you have any sense of how often other states deal with this issue? Because it's been a long time here, but in other states, how often do they deal with it?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a real solid sense of that. I just know that we frequently see changes in the data amongst the states, so there's a constant revision in the schedules. I'm not sure what proportion of the states are updating and how often they do it, but it seems to be that ceiling or that moving average is always changing each year.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Wilson? Senator Bundy.
Thank you. Mentioned that 20% of the cost of UI is to be borne by the laborer. Is the other 80% then borne by the employee, or is there money from the trust or whatever that some interest earnings that help support the program?
Okay, Mr. Chair, Senator Bundy, the way that the formula works is that the system attempts to recapture the average cost of benefits that have been paid out for the last several years. And once that amount is determined, employers basically are responsible for paying 80% and employees 20%. The trust fund does receive interest earnings on a quarterly basis, and that does have the effect of boosting the value of the trust fund, which in itself becomes part of the tax calculation. But only when the value of the trust fund falls below a target window. Right now, what we attempt to do is keep the balance of the trust fund equal to about 3.2% of the value of total wages in the Alaska economy. And as wages grow in the Alaska economy, the ideal is that the trust fund will keep pace. The idea is you'll have a sufficient reserve to carry you through a traumatic episode like we experienced back in 1986 and 87.
If I might, I'm having a little trouble tracking. So the interest of the trust goes back into the trust until there's a cutoff point, or?
Mr. Chair, Senator, any interest earned on a quarterly basis goes back into the trust fund and helps to keep the trust fund balance at the level that's desired by the financing system. Basically, the tax, I don't think there's very much of a tax relief feature associated with that, because what we're trying to do with the unemployment insurance system is replace the amount of benefit dollars that are paid out with tax revenues.
Thank you. I assume that, much like the permanent fund, you hope for 10% and end up realizing 4 or 5% the actual back into the trust.
Mr. Chair, the return into the trust fund based on interest payments is determined by the federal government. They're the ones that actually hold the funds in the U.S. Treasury.
Okay. Another topic of.
Okay, well, if you can hold that for just a second. Any other questions?
Well, on a different topic.
On a different topic. Well, Mr. Wilson, I'd ask, how would you characterize the overall health of the fund today? Healthy or in trouble, and how adequate is the reserve for the future? What's the overall grade or state of health that you would assign to the fund and to the reserve?
I would say that the general health of the fund is healthy. The financing system tries to ensure that the balance of the fund does keep pace with growth in the level of wages in the economy. Right now, there is a solvency element to the employer's tax that is in effect, because what that tells us is that the value of the trust fund needs to be improved slightly. We've had constant growth in the economy over the last several years, and the trust fund is attempting to keep pace with that. Okay. But I would describe the overall health of the trust fund as good.
Great. Okay, Senator Stevens and then Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a similar question I had asked earlier. I don't know if you have any perspective on this, Mr. Wilson, on the it's not an automatic increase, but giving the department the ability to make increases, to establish a methodology to calculate new amounts that increase the weekly benefits. Do you have any comments on advantages or disadvantages of us taking that different tact?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's something that would be a new feature in Alaska's system. One of the advantages that would be similar to what Mr. Shire has stated is that it would relieve the department and the legislature of the need to come back and have a discussion about increasing benefits. What it would do is it would provide an automatic adjustment based on the economy, specifically growth in wages. Now, whether that would be the same as the growth in the consumer price index, I don't know if that's an equal comparison, but it's based on wage growth. Sometimes wages get larger from year to year. Sometimes wages are relatively flat over a period of 4 or 5 years, and we have seen them actually go down from time to time.
Thank you.
Before we take Senator Bundy's question, I just want to state that this is the first public hearing. We appreciate the folks from the Department of Labor being here. We're going to take some more public testimony. I'm planning, I suppose, based on this, some work sessions for us to dig into this in a less formal setting, but as a committee, to deal with these issues. Everything's up for discussion to try and achieve a consensus piece of legislation that passes from this committee onto the Finance Committee and then hopefully on through the process. So we're open to suggestions from the department and everyone involved. So Senator Bundy, why don't you go ahead and ask your question, knowing that we're going to have some work sessions here in the next few weeks. We'll get the rest of the testimony in and then hold over the bill. Senator Bundy?
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate the Trends magazine or issue that you've given us. And referring to page 10, you mentioned legislative considerations, and at the end you suggested that as a partial way to pay for the benefit increase, people who quit and now have to wait 6 weeks, you could extend that waiting period or eliminate, say you, if you quit, you just don't get any benefits at all. Any consideration of the notion if you're fired for cause, whether that should be part of what we consider before you're eligible for benefits, if at all?
Okay, Mr. Chair, Senator Bundy, that is one of the features. The eligibility provisions are something that your committee could look at as a part of this bill. I don't really have any recommendation for that other than to mention it as an example of part of the part of the unemployment insurance system that could be examined in your effort to come up with a piece of legislation?
Yeah, I would assume we could eliminate the benefit to beneficiaries as well. Some there are pieces to move around on the chessboard. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Let's move on to Mr. Vince Beltrami, followed by John Brown, followed by Dennis DeWitt. Mr. Beltrami?
Yes, can you hear me?
Could I interrupt?
Just Senator Bundy?
Perhaps the economist could, sir?
Mr. Wilson?
Well, and I'll just ask the question, and then he can get back to us on whatever.
Okay, sure.
The notion is to whether the benefits to dependents are figured into our average and how where we fall in the scale nationally.
Okay. So that question we can get answered in the next meeting. Mr. Beltrami, if you're there, please go ahead, followed by John Brown in Fairbanks.
Sure. Can you hear me, Senator Ellis?
We can. Please state your name and affiliation and go right ahead.
Certainly. My name is Vince Beltrami. I'm a resident of Senate District P, and I'm president of the Alaska AFL-CIO. Chairman Ellis and other esteemed members of the Labor and Commerce Committee, thanks for the opportunity to testify on behalf of a bill that I think is long overdue. Alaska's been stuck at the bottom of the barrel in terms of how we've taken care of our hardworking employees who find themselves out of work and having to rely on unemployment insurance. And obviously, unemployment income is not intended to be a wage replacement, and we don't want to create disincentives for people to seek a return to work. SB 120 goes quite a ways. I won't say it goes a long ways in restoring fairness and dignity to the hardships that result from loss of wages during periods of involuntary unemployment. And as I'm sure all of you are aware, while Alaska has enjoyed generally high wages, we've slipped over the years. We're currently 18th in average weekly earnings among the 50 states. Our maximum weekly benefit is near the bottom, as we've discussed, ranked 48th. And as a ratio against the average weekly earnings, as we've also heard, dead last amongst the 50 states. And to Senator Hoffman, through the chair, you'd asked about where that would put it for Alaska with the increase that's, if this bill were to pass in its present form, my simple math put it at 49.3% of weekly earnings as a ratio, which would put us at 29th amongst the 50 states. Still not quite in the top half. And, of course, with the sliding scale that's proposed, many Alaskans still wouldn't qualify for the maximum benefit. But SB 120 is definitely a step in the right direction. And those statistics are all fine and dandy, but obviously as a group of fiscally responsible legislators, you're looking at cost-benefit analysis, and the question is, can we afford the increase as a state at this time? And I think the answer is an emphatic yes. We can afford it more easily at this time than any time in the last several years from the research that I've seen. UI benefits that have been paid out have been trending down since 2003, and the trust fund deposits are significantly up. If I look at this graph that I have in front of me that came out of the Employment Security Division, it looks like the fund's grown from in 2003 it was a little below $200 million. And right now it looks like it's roughly around $275 million or so. The bad news for the Alaska worker is that despite low unemployment generally, the cost of living continues to increase in a fashion that's outpacing income. And in some parts of the state, particularly in some parts of rural Alaska, unemployment ranges from 50 to 80% in some places, which is just an atrocity. Then this increase would help offset some of that loss of purchasing power. And in fact, one of the primary benefits, an increase in the UI income, can help stabilize local economies by putting more money into the economy. And I also understand from the folks in the Employment Security Division that the increase wouldn't trigger any increases in terms of employer contributions to the fund as a percentage for potentially several years. And I'm not 100% clear on that, but that's my understanding. And obviously, that's a concern to the employers who have to foot a good portion of the bill. But anecdotally, a few years ago, I was business agent at the IBW, and we had a number of electricians from the state of Washington working seasonally. They were up A number of them wanted to, they loved the state, they wanted to plant roots here, but they were unwilling to wait the winter out to establish their residency when they had qualified unemployment benefits at home that were double what they would get here waiting for them in Washington. And at the same time, aware of a few of our locally trained Alaska electricians who were faced with the option of waiting for work through the winter seasonally and opted to go to work that was available in Washington and Oregon for the simple, one of the reasons being they said that if they got down there and worked and qualified for unemployment and were laid off, they would have a much better benefit down there, which they'd rather sit through the winter down there. And unfortunately, a couple of them have yet to return because that's exactly what happened. But at a time when we're needing to figure out how to increase workforce development efforts and bring more skilled workers into the workforce to prepare them to construct, hopefully, a gas pipeline, I think it's imperative we remove some of these obstacles that exist to either drive people away or lure them to other states. So in summary, I'd say it's clear that an opportunity exists to right a long-time wrong, as there's been no increase in 10 years. And the last one was, in my opinion, woefully inadequate. And to do it at a time when we can afford it, to improve economic stability in our communities and to assist in building a workforce to build the largest construction project in the history of North America. And I'd urge you to pass Senate Bill 120 without altering it negatively and hopefully with consideration of improving some of the benefits further to the benefits of working Alaskans and working families in Alaska. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Mr. Beltrami, thank you for being with us today. Are there comments or questions? Mr. Beltrami, I have a question. You were making the point pretty clearly, I guess, that UI benefit is a significant factor in the state-to-state competition, I guess, for skilled workers?
Well, and yes, sir. Specifically, when we're talking about construction workers with a lot of seasonal work up here, we see a lot of back and forth between folks, and if they are looking at waiting out the winter or waiting for work opportunities, they'd rather go to a place where they have the opportunity to collect twice as much as they would by staying here.
Okay. Thank you very much for your being with us today. And we're open with the public record to any written comments as well. Mr. John Brown in Fairbanks, followed by Dennis DeWitt in Juneau. Mr. Brown, are you there? Okay, maybe we'll come back to Mr. Brown. Mr. DeWitt is here in Juneau. Please join us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Denny DeWitt. I'm the state director for the National Federation of Independent Business. As SB 120 is currently written, we oppose it. Basic problem, and you've discussed it today, is that it simply increases the benefit and that cost is going to fall on small employers. That's a concern of ours. We think there are some things that you could do over the discussion to make it more neutral to employers. Senator Bundy has mentioned several issues that we think ought to be looked at in terms of the period between separation and payment for those who choose voluntarily to leave or are discharged would be one. Recognizing the relationship of the benefit to the income derived from minimum wage would be another. One of the things that we would not want to see is the UI benefit exceeding the minimum wage effectively, so that it's more advantageous for folks not to work than to seek employment. We are concerned also about the indexing that we find in the bill. We believe that that is a legislative prerogative that ought to stay here in the legislature. We have before us, as has been mentioned, the probability of a substantial employment boom around the gas pipeline. That will increase the average weekly wage in Alaska. Atypically, and probably ought to not be something that through a formula drives a change in the UI program. We believe that those decisions ought to be looked at and the decision to move ought to be, again, here with the legislature, so that you can look at whether or not that's a sustainable growth over time or an aberration over time of high salaries that are going to come down. As many of you know, the operation, the building of a gas pipeline is certainly going to bring in a certain amount of employment, but the operation of a gas pipeline is going to have substantially less employment relatively than what we saw in the oil pipeline. So we'd like to see how that plays out before we get into a formulaic approach to increasing benefits. With that, I will look forward to working with the committee, be happy to respond to what questions I could now, and as we go through the process, certainly we'll want to work with you as best we can.
Okay. And if you'd like to submit any written materials or ideas, suggestions, please please feel free to do so. Are there questions or comments for Mr. DeWitt? Senator Stevens.
I'd be particularly interested in learning of the eligibility provisions you might suggest and help specifics in those areas.
Through the chair, Senator, I've been trying to cobble those together quickly. I'll have to admit my newness on the beat has created some difficulty in finding old files and some historical information that I'm trying to pull together, but we certainly hope to have that for you.
But you never left the building. You've just always been around here.
Well, the issue of maintaining decisions and not indexing in bills is one I've been consistent with as I was staff to the legislature, staff to a governor, and in the private sector. But learning all the ins and outs of UI is something that I'm learning.
Mr. DeWitt, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Let's check again in Fairbanks and see if Mr. Brown has joined us. Mr. Brown? If not, we're going to go to Royce Rock and then Barbara Huff-Tuckness. Mr. Rock, are you there in Anchorage?
Yes, sir.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record and go right ahead.
My name is Royce Rock. I'm the business manager for Carpenters Local 1281. And I believe I started testifying on this for the House back in 1999 or possibly 2000. And I also would like to thank James Wilson, because as I look back through my many files, I come across Trends magazines that explain what the UI benefits are about. In 2001, he writes, "The objective of UI system is economic stability for both business and individuals. Since benefits are paid to the unemployed workers, almost every dollar is quickly returned to the economy. This stabilizes both the business climate and the workforce. With the amount that is being paid now, it's doing very little to stabilize anything, in my opinion, and it concerns me greatly when I look at a son of mine with a house payment of $1,200 and an unemployment that doesn't even cover two-thirds of it. Scares the heck out of me, by the way. I'm going to answer a few questions because I think Vince Beltrami did a good job of covering everything about this. But, you know, there was questions asked concerning why would we have just an increase all the time instead of coming legislatively. One of the reasons I found over the years of doing this, and you must understand I'm a little frustrated because I've been involved in this fight since we began this back in 2000. One of the things that has stopped it every year, especially on the Senate side, is politics. Pure and simple politics, or different people's philosophy of whether somebody is going to quit a $1,200, $1,300 a week job to draw $248 and call it rocking chair, or whatever reasons there is, but it's been politics. This isn't politics, folks. This is people's lives we're dealing with. This is workers' lives, and we have to think about it from that angle, and we have to quit about looking about a philosophy on whether somebody should get, taking advantage of a situation or whether they're actively seeking work. I can't imagine anybody that would rather have $248 than $1,200 a week in construction. This bill does a lot as far as what the bottom line is, $370 versus $248. But the truth of the matter is, in the 2001 proposed bill, the maximum would have raised to $284 at $31,250. And the 2007 proposal that's in front of you, it didn't raise anything from that. It's still at $284 at $31,250. What has changed is the maximum amount you must make to get the maximum amount of the 370 or whatever the odd change is on this. But as the Trends magazine also points out, a third of the claimants get the 248 average. Would that number drop if by raising the amount that people have to take? I imagine it would. The average right now that people are getting is $193.91, so I would imagine that figure is going to drop. Folks, this has gone on a long time. I'm retiring from the Carpenters. You've worn me out. I've tried everything in my power to make this bill pass. We have attempted to make a bill that helps both labor and management. Mr. DeWitt speaks that he's against passing this because it's a burden on small businesses. But, you know, I've been around so long, I remember when he worked for House, I think he was finance member, Mulder, and they passed a bill to spend $10 million, I believe the figure was, at the Avtec Center in Seward and Kotzebue out of the unemployment fund. So the change is a little bit, but Denny, it was nice to hear your voice anyway. Senator Hoffman asked the question, you know, the escalation, you know, if we got it, where would it put us as far as percentage or number? You know, folks, I really don't care. I am embarrassed that we're at the bottom of the list, but I think what we need to look at is how this helps our people instead of what number we are, what anything. If we're at the bottom of the list and our economy is at the bottom, it's fine. But if we're at the economy cost of what we are, we should be comparable in unemployment to help both business and labor. You know, I did dig up a lot of things, and I went back and I wrote an opinion article in 2002, and it was in there. I wrote an editorial. This has taken up way too much of my life. Let's get on with this thing. I'm not really happy with Senate bill because all it really did was raise the amount you have to make to get the maximum, but it's a definite increase, and folks, it's 10 years. Thank you, and I'm more than willing to answer any questions.
Mr. Rock, thank you for being with us. Are there questions for the presenter? Senator Bundy.
Yeah, hi, Rice. I'm just happy to know I was one of those to help wear you out.
You definitely did, Senator.
Tell Jake I said hi, will you?
I'll do it.
Thanks.
Anything further? If not, Mr. Rock, thank you for being with us. We appreciate your part in this ongoing discussion.
Thank you.
Mr. Brown in Fairbanks, are you with us yet? If not, we'll turn to our final presenter here in Juneau, Barbara Huff-Tuckness. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barbara Huff-Tuckness. I am Director of Governmental and Legislative Affairs for Teamsters Local 959. And I probably just very quickly like to say that we're, for the record, we do support Senate Bill 120. I've listened to all of the testimony. There's probably not too much more that I need to add. I think it was mentioned that the unemployment insurance has actually been around since 1935. Probably some of you, while you didn't have personal friends, maybe family members during the Great Depression, that actually did benefit from this. I don't know that from a philosophical perspective that's necessarily changed. We talked amongst a couple of us when we heard that the bill was coming up for a hearing. Well, who could we bring to the table to testify? Those folks that are unemployed, that are out looking for work. I personally cannot believe that we've got, and we probably have a few for the senator, who would take, if you want to say, advantage, even at the proposed increase at the maximum salary level of $370 a week. I don't know too many folks that are being paid $25, $30, $35 an hour that are going to give up that kind of a job to receive that kind of a benefit. It makes not a lot of sense when you look at it from even the lowest, denominator there. It does not make a lot of sense. I personally have a daughter who's making between $15 and $16 an hour. She's a single parent. She has car insurance. She has an apartment rent. She lives on her own. She's not about to give up a job and go in. I mean, she couldn't afford it, even with the dependent income coming in. And I believe it's $25 a week. I think we all need to remember, and I recognize from a business, whether it's a big business or a small business, the impact is going to be out there. Yes, it is going to be an increase. My understanding, and I wish that the department had actually covered this, it is not an immediate increase. It is something that's projected out over quite a few years, and probably as we're going through discussing this during the, I guess, the next couple of committee hearings, that maybe some of that can be ferreted out as well, because it also impacts employees. I believe Senator Bundy asked earlier, does this not impact, from a financial perspective, the working people? Yes, we will all be paying that increase. I believe we are one of three states in the country that actually requires employee contributions into the unemployment insurance. Is that a bad thing? Personally, I don't believe that it is. Personally, I believe that you would get the working people of this state to support such under the circumstances that, worst case scenario, there is some sort of an interim economic cushion. It's not going to take care of all of your needs out there, but at least in those worst case scenarios where you do find that you've lost employment, at least there's something there on a temporary basis to rely on. And with that, I'd like to wrap up my comments, encourage the committee to work through. I think it's healthy to ask and answer some of those tough questions, and hopefully we can get through those and move this piece of legislation. And I do believe, as the previous speakers have, it's a very important piece of legislation that I would be proud as a resident of Alaska and a working person in this state to see passed after 10 years. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there comments or questions for Barb? If not, thanks for being with us. We hope you'll be part of the continuing ongoing discussion. That wraps it up for today. Unless there are any further requests, committee staff and I, as the chair, have noted some of the requests for information and questions that have come up. We'll try and make sure we cover those in the future work sessions. Are there any other requests for information at this stage? If not, is there further business to come before the committee? If not, we'll thank the folks who joined us today, and we will adjourn at 2:45 in the afternoon.